Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Jake, I don't want to be this person. So just keep that in mind. Like, I don't want to be negative Nancy or Debbie Downer. And I know everyone's going to think so after I say this. But I just want you to hear me out with an open mind. All right. It's a holiday week. Be welcoming to this topic I'm about to broach. I've got to be honest. We're all friends here. And honesty is the best policy. Great. I'm always ready. I'm always ready for a fight. It's just this, Jake. Thursday night's win was fun. Right? Me, you, and Curtis, we were all texting each other. Seahawks Twitter was blowing up. Everyone was excited. What a way to end the game with a Carlos Dunlap sack of Kyler Murray. It was awesome. Like, count me among the people who were elated about the potential that this team showed, and more importantly, the potential they showed on defense, because we knew what they could be on offense. But it didn't prove much to me. Like, this team is not out of the woods. In fact, I think if we're being honest with ourselves, we're not being honest about how much more they have to prove, right? We've had a couple days of, you know, saying like, oh, this defense took a huge step forward, and they did that day. But you have 9 weeks of a defense playing historically bad, so bad that Russell Wilson looked like he might be wasting an MVP campaign. And then went away and kind of threw that away himself, trying to make up for mistakes on defense or maybe overthinking things and trying to do too much. And if I want to talk about them being a contender, I have almost no evidence to support it outside of Russell Wilson and one game from the defense. And I know that there are moments, and I know that that's simplifying it. But at the same time, we're being honest, I haven't seen enough. And I want to feel better about it, Jake, but I also got to be real with you right now.
Well, I think that we have evidence that this defense is turning the corner, but Stacey, you're absolutely right. Like, I want to come in here with a fight with you, and I want to be able to defend the Seahawks and defend this defense. But the quite honest truth is, here in the Pacific Northwest, we have a tendency to always want to look at the good in every situation. We want to look at, you know, the bright spots and look ahead to what is to come. But the reality is that the Seahawks have a lot more to prove. And that is why these next 4 weeks, and particularly this Monday night matchup with the Eagles, is so important. Because they're still needing to build, Stacey. They're still needing to build a championship-level team because they're not there yet. And, you know, what happened last Thursday was huge on multiple levels. But most importantly, they were able to stabilize their season and get back on track when things looked the most dire. What this Seahawks defense has to show is consistency. And I think that's what you're saying, is that this group, what we've seen from them, we've seen more bad from them than we've seen good. And what all of a sudden makes us believe that they can turn it around in just a week or two's time, just like that, with a snap of your fingers almost. I don't think all of a sudden you go from playing historically bad defense to all of a sudden turning things around in a flash and playing tremendous football. But I want to play cut number four here. Pete Carroll kind of talking about why, in his thoughts, that this defense has really started to click over the last six quarters of football.
The guys have really taken a step forward in owning what they're doing, and the communications and the adjustments and utilizing the package and disguising really well and really feeling comfortable with it. And it's just taken us quite a while to get the continuity so we could talk like that. And I'm hoping that we take a real good step this week too. A couple extra outings here in practice, getting ready. We'll just continue to own what we're doing. And I think that may be the biggest statement, you know. And it's more the playing together thing and everybody understanding one another and communicating and maximizing what the scheme is all about. Hopefully we can continue to do that.
So, Stacey, do you hear Pete Carroll when you listen to that and listen to him say, Yep, he totally believes that they've turned the corner here, that he believes that this defense is going down the path of greatness. Or do you hear some hesitancy there?
I hear hesitancy. A little bit.
Why?
Because I have hesitancy. I think I am projecting it. And I know that Carroll, I've covered him for years, is an eternal optimist. An eternal optimist. And will always see the bright side of things. And look, normally I am too. Like, normally, I'm the one bagging on other people that are constantly being negative and being pessimists because I think it makes them sound smarter to do so. Like, I'm normally the one saying it doesn't make you sound smarter to be a pessimist. I think that the reason I'm trying to be honest about this team right now is that I know what their ceiling is. And I also know that they haven't proven to me that they can reach it. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be being mad if I thought that this team surpassed its ceiling Thursday night or had surpassed its ceiling or was playing on luck through 10 weeks this season. I don't think that's the case. I think that's why I'm saying, like, don't take your foot off the gas.
Yeah, and that is, I think, is really important. What were you telling me that Bob Condotta said in his Seattle Times article? What was it?
So Bob Condotta said in his Seattle Times mailbag that he had this week that the Seattle Seahawks, who had been on pace to give up the most yards of any defense in NFL history for the very first time this season, were not on pace to do that. So the New Orleans Saints were averaging about 440 the season that they did that. And the Seattle Seahawks, up until this game against the Arizona Cardinals, were averaging more than that. So now they're closer to 434 or something like that. So for the first time.
We have arrived.
We
are not on record-breaking pace here.
We're not the worst.
I think that's why it's a legitimate argument. And guess what? I don't hear that from Pete either. I hear from Pete that he's going, I hope so. I want to see. Here's what I hope happens. He's not fully committed to saying, yep, this is the defense who we're going to be. We are going to be much better communicators moving forward. It's more of a, hey, I think we've turned a corner, but I want to make sure that we are, as a group, working every single week to make that happen. And we need to prove that out on Sundays rather than talking about it during the week and saying and patting ourselves on the back of how great a practice we are having currently. We need to show it on game day. And he had that conversation and that kind of talk before this Thursday game against the Arizona Cardinals. That's the first time, Stacey, I had heard him this year kind of have a change in his language, in the way that he was communicating and saying, look, I'm done promising things. We're going to go out there and prove it to you. We're going to go out there and earn it. And this week against the Eagles, we're going to go out and earn it. And the consistency, coming back to that, they have to be consistent in their communication on the field. They have to be consistent in their ability to generate a pass rush without having to sell out with over 50%, blitzing. They need to consistently be the aggressor and bring their own juice, bring their own energy to every single game. And those are the things that we need to see on a consistent basis before, Stacey, I think you're ready to sit there and say that this group has officially turned the corner.
Yeah.
Me being the eternal optimist and me being somebody that looks at the evidence that's in front, I did see things that they have not done that I think that they can continue, that they're not one-off performances that I think are not sustainable. They were better in their assignments against the Cardinals. Carlos Dunlap was a huge difference in their pass rush, and it affected everybody else. Puna Ford, Jaron Reed, even Rasheem Green hustling sideline to sideline, chasing screens down. And you couple that with Shaquille Griffin potentially coming back, and it sounds like he will be back this week. You finally will have a secondary that will be stable for the first time in a long time. And I think that that's pointing to some of the reason, in terms of evidence, Stacey, that I think that they can turn the corner. But to your point, they got to go prove it before we should be giving them any sort of credit that it's going to happen.
I think that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that, like, it was fun to have 10 days, including a stretch of a holiday week where don't get me wrong. I will very much enjoy having a relaxing Thanksgiving with this team coming off of a win over the Cardinals when I get to eat a bunch of Thanksgiving food and watch other games and not have to worry about the Seahawks. And not only that, but look forward to the Seahawks facing a slate of pretty weak opponents. Like, you're in a good spot. But I would be lying to you guys if I just pretended that I felt entirely confident about this team heading out of that game. And the reason that I don't feel confident is because they have 10 weeks of showing me otherwise. And again, like, there are people that aren't going to want to hear that, but I'm just being honest with you guys. Like, I've been covering this team. I've seen this team look great. I've seen this team struggle. I'm not quite sure what to make of this season. They have the components of being one of the better teams they've been, and also some mistakes that I've never seen them make before. And I'm still kind of stuck in limbo figuring out which direction they're going to go in. And the win against the Cardinals made me excited. It was fun, but it didn't necessarily give me an answer. And so I think I need to see more. And that's all
I'm saying. We have to see more because, Stacey, guess what? We had our hopes, you know, high earlier this year, only to have them dashed and brought back to reality. Remember the San Francisco game? You remember that? Where we came in the next week and said, that's it. That's what we got to do. We unleashed Bobby Wagner. We unleashed all this pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo. That's the formula. That's what we have to do moving forward. And then they have 2 weeks where they struggle mightily. Probably their two of their worst performances defensively. The Rams game, I know they settled down in the second half,
offensively,
midway through the third quarter. But as a collective team, they go out and have their two worst games, right, of the season. So we need to see consistency. We need to see consistency from this group, and that's what these next 4 weeks can provide, particularly for this defense, is consistency. There's zero reason why we shouldn't see consistent performance from the defense when you look at this. And one thing that also, I think, when you're talking about evidence, I want to go to cut number three here. You know, Cliff Averill talking about where he thinks, you know, the defensive struggles were coming from.
So I would say it's a little bit of both. Like I said, I think you got to know your personnel, but also on the other side, you know, these guys got to take responsibility, you know, and look themselves in the mirror and make sure they understand where they need to be so they can make this thing work and understand that they're all on a chain. If one piece of the chain is the link is broke, I mean, they're going to gas you, and you're putting more stress on somebody else, and that's not fair, and that's not how the game or the scheme is supposed to be played.
And for the Seahawks defense, for the majority of this year, it hasn't been one link that's been broken. It's been 2 to 3 links that's been broken on any given play. And for the first time in a long time, you saw them play sound coverage. You saw them work together. You saw the pass rush and pass coverage, defensive pass coverage, play together hand in hand to benefit one another throughout the game, Stacey. And that is what you hope that you can rely on this defense to do as they get healthier. Because guess what? They're also running out of excuses. They're running out of excuses as to why things aren't coming together. It's now or never, in my opinion.
Well, and you have the talent to do it too, right? That's the entire reason we're having this conversation. If this was a banged up team with very little talent that was just skating by, we'd be having a conversation entirely different. We'd be like, can they keep doing this? Isn't it fantastic? The conversation we're having instead is, this should be a contender. You've got Russell Wilson. You should be a contender every single year. You've got the winningest Seahawks coach in franchise history. You've got Bobby Wagner. You traded 2 first-round picks for Jamal Adams. You brought in Carlos Dunlap, and ended up being a huge difference-making move for you. You should be more, and we're expecting more, and you have the space and the time and the opportunity to be more. I don't want anyone to hear this and think there's not opportunity. You should hear it, and you should feel fired up and excited, not pessimistic. Mm-hmm. You should feel fired up and excited, but also you should be honest with yourself, and you should know that it is so vital that this team come out and prove something against the Eagles, prove something against the Jets, prove something against the Giants. I don't care how bad these opponents are. You have more to prove.
you do have more to prove, and you have not arrived yet. You have not arrived to the dance, and as I said all year long, that this team has the highest ceiling of any team in the league. Yes, any team in the league, because of that talent, because of those components, Stacey, that you were talking about on defense. We know what they are on offense. Can they be that on defense? Can they improve significantly on defense? And all of a sudden, all these people that were talking and clamoring for Ken Norton Jr.'s job, all of a sudden, you know, they have one good defensive performance and everybody's quiet. So it only takes one defensive performance for you guys to, you know, sit back and go, well, never mind. I think we can deal with this. No, it's got to be consistent performances to show you that this defense has turned a corner and that everybody that is associated with that defense is worthy of the trust.
All right, we got a fun show for you guys. We're going to be having some Washington Wednesday, getting you ready for some college football this weekend, talking about who's going to make the biggest impact in return for Monday Night Football. We've also got the huddle coming up next, so we are going to get you guys ready for this upcoming Monday night game. Before that, though, let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
Guys, I was watching the college football playoff ranking show last night and could not have felt more disconnected to the rest of the college football world. Has it been difficult for you to get emotionally invested in this year's college season?
100%. It is really hard to get emotionally invested. And, you know, it's great having UW, and it's great seeing the Cougs play. You know, the Cougs haven't played much this season. And UW has had to cancel a couple games, unfortunately. But it's been great to see them on TV. And I would get emotionally invested if there was another month or two of a season to play where there it was jam-packed full of games. But that's not the case. We're only going to get, as of right now, what it looks like, we're going to get five games at the most from Pac-12 teams. So it's hard to get emotionally invested in that. And then, yeah, I'm right there with you. I have not been connected to the rest of the country because the Pac-12 just hasn't been part of the conversation.
Yeah, and that's been the case for a while. And I kind of knew that this would be the case this year, and I knew it would be tough. But I thought that there would be a bit more of a Mariners feeling where it was a weird season. You knew you weren't contending, but there was enough there to be excited. Like, I was genuinely excited to talk about guys like Kyle Lewis, guys like Evan White, J.P. Crawford. This year, it's like I feel like it's just a weird season that I have to remind myself to watch games, you know, that are like fun, big matchups. I mean, I'm talking outside of the Pac-12, too. You're talking like SEC games and games that are hyped up. And it's weird. Personally, for me, and I know this isn't information anyone needs, but I never watched a lot of college football growing up. My parents didn't go to college. I didn't have any allegiance to any team. But college football is what originally got me into football as a whole. And so it holds kind of a special place in my heart. And I just haven't felt that connection this year. It's a bummer. It really is.
You know, it's a real bummer, though, that Curtis's Arizona Wildcats were not featured in the college football playoff.
It's weird. It's unexpected.
I can't believe this, Curtis.
It's
how?
Incredibly unexpected.
You know who else wasn't featured in the college football playoff?
Right, let's
the
get
Washington
to question
Huskies.
Number two.
Because they're unranked,
we can go to
and they beat nobody
right now,
this year.
Go ahead and click that.
Number two.
Don't get Curtis fired up today.
Get off your high
Don't
horse, Husky fans. You
I like
beat
it up
nobody.
Here.
Question two. Who will have a bigger impact on the rest of the season for the Seahawks? Darryl Taylor or Rashad Penny?
This is easy.
Yeah.
This is actually very
easy. Can we say the answer at the same time? One, two, three. Darryl Taylor.
Darryl Taylor.
Okay. Well, yep. It wasn't the same time, but...
Well, it's just because I'm delayed, okay? I'm in my, you know, shed studio over here while you're in the real deal.
My fancy studio.
Yeah. All to yourself. Darryl Taylor, to me, is easily going to be the player out of those two that will have the most impact this year. Now, maybe I'm wrong, and I'm knocking on wood. You don't want this to happen. If Hyde or Carson were to go down again, then you would need Rashad Penny on his, you know, white shining horse, his stallion, to come in and save the day. But I don't think that that's going to happen. I think Darryl Taylor is going to be the added boost to this defensive front that really makes this pass rush a terror. And I don't mean that Darryl Taylor is going to come in here and he's going to be all over the place. He's going to be getting sacks left and right. But I do think that he has a motor. He has talent. He has a nose for getting to the quarterback. And I think that he's going to cause disruption along with all the good that's already going on that's developing with Carlos Dunlap and with Jaron Reed and you know, the rest of the crew. Benson Mayowa just got back, you know, for the first time in a month. So I think there's a lot of good stuff that's brewing across that defensive line. I think Daryl Taylor, when he comes back in probably about 2 weeks, I think he's going to add to that group and be a factor.
I agree with Jake, and I also agree with Jake because yesterday you mentioned that you were hearing a little birdie told you some good things about Daryl Taylor, and I think that's made me more optimistic after what's been kind of a disappointing start to his Seahawks career, which is nothing. But
this guy's a physical specimen. This guy, he's been working out. He has been, even though he has not been practicing, he has been doing as much as he can up to this point. I think that it will be a quicker transition than people might think.
Has been working on his fitness. What I'll add to that then, since I agree with you there, is I am curious to see whether or not Rashad Penny's return, if and when that happens, impacts Chris Carson's potential re-signing at all. So Chris Carson playing in the last year of his deal, that's been an ongoing conversation. Because he's been absent and not playing, it's one we haven't really revisited a lot. I fully expect us to get back into that, especially if he comes out, you know, guns blazing, making a huge difference, looking physical, looking like an impactful player. I think that this team was hoping to see whether Rashad Penny could give them enough to where they felt comfortable moving on from Carson. So far, he is not. And now you have a handful of games to maybe give them that support, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Question three.
Number three.
Before we get to question three, shout out to 360 on Vizihard Seltzer text line. It says, Crybaby Stacy.
Wow. I tell you guys one time that my sister gave me a mean nickname. My sister is a bully, called me Crybaby Stacy in fourth grade one time, and it has since come back to haunt me from working with these two every day. Tarek, don't you dare.
Just gotta live with it, Stacy. Question three. With the Steelers-Ravens game getting postponed till Sunday, tomorrow's NFL slate looking pretty rough. Texans and Lions at 9:30. Washington at Cowboys at 1:30.
Let's go.
Do you plan on watching some of the doubleheader, most of it, or none of it?
I plan on watching none of the early game because I plan on sleeping in as late as I possibly can. I'll wake up to the world after noon. Sorry, Jake. And then
I hate you.
And then I am curious. What I think is going to happen with the NFC East matchup is sometimes something is so ugly. A matchup on both sides is so ugly that it becomes a good game. And I'm hoping that's what happens with this one. You know what I mean? They play down to each other that there's so much chaos. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a safety. There's going to be a pick six. There's going to be all kinds of weird stuff. And that's what I want to happen in this game. I want chaos I sit and eat mashed potatoes and turkey.
Yeah, well, you want chaos, and you're probably just going to get a dumpster fire of a game.
Yeah.
But I think that both games should be entertaining. In all seriousness, no. I think that the Lions and the Texans, you're going to have, you know, Stafford versus Deshaun Watson. You know, Watson has been playing really good football this year, despite having nothing around him. So I think that will be entertaining. If you want a little blast from the past, you know, go ahead and watch the Lions. Adrian Peterson, Daryl Bevel calling plays, you know, as offensive coordinator. So I think that it should be entertaining. But the Washington Cowboys game.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure.
I'm ready for it. I'm going to be texting you guys the whole time. Like, turn on this game. Let's go.
I'm just bitter that you're going to be sleeping in. I guarantee you I'll be up at probably 7:15, 7:30.
Yeah, but you have such a beautiful family. I mean, you know what I mean? The trade-off is that you have this beautiful family you got to spend time with. And the trade-off for me is I got to wake up at 1 p.m. and eat pie. I mean, it's just, what can you do? All right, the Apple Cup is off the table. UW-BYU is off the table because they're scared. But there will be a game this weekend for
the
Huskies.
Get out of here.
They'll face off against Utah on Saturday. We'll get you guys ready for that game with Washington Wednesday next.
Washington Wednesdays, brought to you by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors.
All right, we're not going to get an Apple Cup for Thanksgiving for the first time since World War II. Kind of a bummer, but We will still get a game for the Huskies, this one against the Utah Utes. So we've got Jake Heaps here, Washington Wednesday, going to get you guys ready for this game. Let's get started with just kind of a look back at their win over OSU in Arizona. Specifically, Jake, what's the most promising development you saw on offense in that win over the Beavers and the jump to the win over Arizona?
Well, the promising development is obviously, I think, quarterback Dylan Morris. I mean, when you see him from week one to week two, what is the consistent jump in performance? I think that's the biggest key there. And Dylan was able to have a really nice, efficient night. I mean, you see him, you know, being able to have, you know, two touchdowns, was very efficient. 15 for 25. So those are the things that you're really looking for out of Dylan Morris. You're not looking for him to go out there and win you games. He doesn't need to go and win games for you, but he has to keep things on track. And when he gets his opportunities to pass the ball, he's got to be efficient with it. And I think that's, you know, going to be right up Dylan Morris's wheelhouse this year. And I think he can grow into something even more special, even more potent as the season goes on and, you know, for the rest of his career. I think this system fits him like a glove, but it's that counterbalance that we talk about, Stacey, when you talk about the Seahawks, you know, let Russ Cook, having Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson. For Washington, this is very much old school downhill running football. We're going to run it down your throat. We're trying to run it for over 200 yards per game, and they look great doing it with the stable of backs that they have. But you need to have that balance of pass with Dylan Morris to be able to make it all come together, and that's what I thought was the best development. And you finally got Cade Otton involved, your tight end, who, you know, from Tumwater. Shout out to Tumwater. You know, there's a long line of Ottens there who have gone on and played, you know, at the college football level. But Cade Otton looked great, and if you're going to have a you know, downhill running attack, you need to have a tight end who can, that you could take advantage of some of those heavier boxes with play action. And it was great to see him get involved.
Before I take a look at those running backs or their other weapons, when we talk about that downfield attack, we know that they're a power run team. We know they're a throwback offense. But what's more ceiling like as far as, you know, when you can attack with the deep ball, that occasional deep pass and deep strike? I mean, what's his ceiling there? He hasn't reached it yet. He won't this year, but...
No, I do think he can do it, though. Dylan Morris has that absolutely in his repertoire and can do it. To me, it's more on this receiving core. It's more on this receiving core to step up and be able to make the consistent plays necessary to you know, give confidence to Jimmy Lake and to John Donovan to consistently dial that style of play call up. And right now, I don't think that they have generated that confidence yet. And this was a nice game to get things going in the right direction here. You know, from a receiver standpoint, guys were more efficient. I mean, that catch that Puka Nacua had and was able to take it to the house, that's why he had all the hype coming out of, you know, Orem, Utah. His ability to be extremely athletic, to have sure hands. He's running a shallow crossing route from left to right. Dylan Morris throws it behind him as he's full speed. He's able to catch, turn, and then take it to the house for 65 yards. I mean, Stacey, that's one athletic play that Nacua had. So you have the talent as a receiving corps. They've got to put it all together, though.
When you're looking ahead at this short week, obviously Washington wasn't sure who exactly it was going to play. There was Washington State, which they found out early enough that game would be canceled, so at least you had some time to prepare there. They thought it might be BYU. BYU wasn't having it for reasons we will never agree on.
They wanted to cancel the game. The Pac-12 wanted to cancel the game so that UW could leave BYU high and dry with the game, because all along, Stacey, they were going to play Utah. BYU knew it and wasn't going to commit to something unless the Pac-12 and UW were willing to fully commit to them. And hey, what do you know?
And
UW,
Jake,
fans are quiet, silent.
No
today.
One is happier about that than BYU. BYU ecstatic that's not the case.
They wanted to play this game.
I think they could have used a game against a Pac-12 opponent. When you're talking about the short turnaround, though, how tough is it to prepare for an opponent when you're looking at it this way. You didn't know who you were going to play. It's now Wednesday. You figure out you're playing Utah on Saturday. I mean, how much does that impact your game planning?
Well, it impacts it quite a bit because you've lost some significant time to prepare. And I think Wednesday, you know, by this time, you'll have enough to get an idea, but it's just not enough. It's not enough for a typical college program to prepare each week. The nice thing, though, that you have if you're UW is you know your opponent. You know Kyle Whittingham. You know what the University of Utah likes to do. They're as consistent of a program as you're going to find. And so I think it's easier to prepare for a stable program like that than it is necessarily for Kyle Whittingham to prepare necessarily for somebody like UW. Who has a different style of offense and a different style that they want to play. They'll make it work. They'll figure it out. But I think that when you look at this situation for coaches and players, it's definitely not ideal.
Now, the most promising development for the Huskies has been on the defensive side of the ball. That pass rush looking pretty legit, but is that the product of a shortened season or weak opponents? Or is there really something there that's flashing and that they can build on?
Well, obviously there's something there. I mean, what you're looking at with this defense and offense is they're playing really good complementary football. Their ability to run the football, their ability to be extremely physical at the point of attack, their offensive line has done a tremendous job in establishing the line of scrimmage. And I think they've done that on both sides of the ball, to be quite honest with you, Stacey. They've been able to defensively get after the quarterback extremely well also. This season so far couldn't have gone better in terms of the way that Jimmy Lake envisioned his team being. So, yes, I think there's plenty to build on this, and now they need to go improve it against somebody like Utah, who is a more legitimate program outside of Oregon State and Arizona at this point right now. Utah will be a much, much tougher test.
All right. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heap, Stacey Ross here with you. Here's what we want to know. Whose return for the Seahawks is going to make the biggest impact on Monday Night Football? You got these three choices: running back Chris Carson, center Ethan Posick, or cornerback Shaquille Griffin. Vizzy Hart, Seltzer text line 710-710. Text in your answer to that. We'll talk about it next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, we're asking you guys whose return will make the biggest impact on Monday Night Football for the Seahawks. Your choices, 710-710, Busy Hard Seltzer text line, or running back Chris Carson, center Ethan Posick, cornerback Shaquille Griffin. Before we do that, though, I do have something quick to update you. Jimmy Lake, head coach of the Washington Huskies, was having a press conference during our Washington Wednesday segment. So one little news piece heading out of that presser. Jimmy Lake says that if UW does not play in the Pac-12 title game, which would be the weekend of December 19th, he would prefer that the Apple Cup be played on that day. Are you guys in favor of it? I say yes, obviously. Jake, I mean, why would you say no to this?
Well, you wouldn't say no to this. Anybody that says
no
to this is a fool. Is a fool, Stacey.
You're an idiot.
Of course, you're going to try and do everything you can to play this Apple Cup, and we'll see if UW is able to get themselves in the Pac-12 championship this year. And I think as of right now, the way it's set up, they probably got a great chance to do it. So we'll see what happens. But personally, I would love to see the Apple Cup played.
All right, something to keep an eye on for all you Coug and Husky fans, that those hopes for an Apple Cup are not dead. We were anticipating it might be rescheduled, but now Jimmy Lake making it clear he very much would like to see that happen December 19th if UW is not in the Pac-12 title game. All right, let's look ahead to this Monday Night Football between the Seahawks and Eagles. I'm looking at the Vizzyard Seltzer text line again, 710-710. Not the answer I was expecting. And that's all I'll say about that. My answer with whose return will make the biggest impact Monday Night Football, without hesitation, I said running back Chris Carson. I just think what you saw with Carlos Hyde back out there made a monumental impact on your offense. And Chris Carson is even better than Carlos Hyde. Not just like Carlos Hyde, but that's just the truth. I mean, he's a fantastic running back. He knows this system. He's been with your team. And I think that what you might even see with him back out there, Jake, is him used in a different capacity, something more resembling 2019 as opposed to the beginning of 2020. In 2020, he was used more heavily than ever before in the pass game, where he was leading all running backs through, I think, 4 or 5 weeks in total touchdowns, receiving and rushing touchdowns, but was not a leading rusher, was not leading in rushing touchdowns or yards or carries or any of that. I think that you might see him used in more a classic sense, as Pete Carroll would say, a very classic fashion when he returns Monday night.
I would agree with you there. And particularly when you have this Eagles defense that struggles like they do, as you've mentioned, against the run, I think that that's an element that you want to be able to have Chris Carson involved and a part of that running attack along with Carlos Hyde. Because the whole point of getting both of these players, Stacey, was that neither one of these guys needed to carry the load, that they needed to have a high volume of carries, that they could split them between the two of them and still be highly effective and keep them healthy and fresh. So I would anticipate that that is going to be the idea behind this week. But one outlier there, Stacey, is Ethan Posick.
Mm-hmm.
Getting Ethan Posick back and involved in this lineup is going to be big, because you don't necessarily, you were able to get through with Damian Lewis as your starting center last week. You don't want to have to do that 2 weeks in a row, and especially when you don't know if Brandon Shell is going to be playing this Monday night. You want to have as much continuity on that offensive line as possible, and getting Posick back, which is able to move Damian Lewis back to his original spot, and all you have to worry about is one change, which is your right tackle position. I think that that puts you in a better position overall. So getting Ethan Posick back also is going to be a key.
Also, if I'm Damian Lewis, I want the riding off into the sunset version of my play at center. You know what I mean? Like, I want that yes. to be my game where I was like, and you're welcome. Damian Lewis out. Like, I did everything I could. It was a solid effort, an impressive effort by a rookie who had never done it before. I don't want a chance to come back in for my second start there, and now the pressure's on a little bit more. Like, that's how I want to end it. I want the Peyton Manning win the Super Bowl, walk away from the game version of playing at center. That's what I want.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, go out on a high note when everybody's
exactly.
feeling good about you. The only reason why, Stacey, maybe you and I aren't necessarily saying Shaquille Griffin. I mean, Shaquille Griffin was a Pro Bowler last year. He's a Pro Bowl alternate player. He has 3 picks this season. I mean, how could you not be excited about getting Shaquille Griffin back into the lineup? But the reason why I don't feel it as big of a need as the other two is just simply because I think that Trey Flowers did a nice job last week against DeAndre Hopkins. I am very excited about what DJ Reed can develop and be in your defense. He is explosive. He is aggressive. I think he has gotten better at each and every single week. So I believe that they have, if they can handle the Arizona Cardinals without Shaquille Griffin, I think that they could do that versus the Eagles, who are absolutely devoid of legitimate talent at the skill position. So it's not that you don't need Shaquille Griffin. It's not that you're not excited to have him back. I just think in this particular matchup, Chris Carson and Ethan Posick are needed for this game.
Okay, so Jake, that's exactly what made this so interesting, because I was fully expecting all of y'all in the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line to respond Chris Carson. Like, I thought it would go Carson, Griffin, Posick. No offense to offensive linemen. It's just, let's be real. You guys are not always going to be the first choice for most people when it comes to exciting positions. Dwayne Brown's not going to like hearing this, but thankfully I'll never have to run into him. But the most popular answer, according to all of you guys, Shaquille Griffin, almost like far and away the most popular answer. And there are some mixed,
really?
There are some mixed responses though, because I think the majority of responses say, look, the defensive backs, the secondary has been a problem. I just want an experienced person back out there. I don't care if Philly doesn't have the receiving threats it used to, and if Carson Wentz isn't who he used to be. I want an experienced guy out there. That's I think the majority of the answers. But there is a portion, Jake, of Shaquille Griffin responders who say, I mean it in a bad way, because I've been more impressed with DJ Reed, and I'm worried about what the secondary is going to look like when you get back some of the guys that were out there, assuming you get back Shaquille Griffin and Quentin Dunbar. And that's tough stuff. That's tough stuff.
Oh,
I don't know if it's
wow,
going to, I don't know if that's what I'd say, but you know what? Everyone has a point to make, and that's a fair point to make.
It is a fair point to make. I don't think you could say that about Shaquille Griffin, but I do think you could say that about Quentin Dunbar. I mean, I compared – I mean, it's – I feel bad in saying it because I never want to compare anybody to green bean casserole, but we were talking about Thanksgiving dinners.
The worst side dish.
And the worst side dish, and, you know, we came to the agreement that, you know, probably it's green bean casserole. And I think that Quentin Dunbar – is that green bean casserole that hasn't worked out for you and unfortunately has been injured. And that Buffalo Bills game is a game that you never, ever want to remember again. I don't even want to – I wish I could remove it from my memory.
Yeah. Like the Men in Black, but kind of like the flash to take the memory
that's
away.
Right.
That's what I want
exactly.
for Buffalo.
Yeah, I want that game out of my brain. But – With the way that DJ Reed and Trey Flowers have played in their absence, particularly against the Arizona Cardinals, it is confidence boosting. And if Griffin can come back, I'm curious to see who's going to play next to him. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be a rotation of Reed and Trey Flowers, or is it going to be Reed? Is it going to be Flowers? Because I am very, very high on DJ Reed. I think this coaching staff is very high on DJ Reed. Flowers had a nice game versus DeAndre Hopkins last week. So it's going to be some tough decisions that will have to be made there in how to figure out who to put the best guys out on the field ultimately are for the Seattle Seahawks defensively. And guess what? That's a good problem to have.
Also, I agree with you. I've been really impressed with DJ Reed, and I had to remind myself, DJ Reed played outside corner in college. I think all of us were looking at him competing at this nickel spot, coming in, making his debut with Seattle in week 8, mostly to back up Ugo Amadi or compete with Ugo Amadi in that slot corner position. But he has been an outside corner before, played outside corner in college, and held his own and did so well against the Arizona Cardinals. I'm very curious to know what that battle is going to look like now at right cornerback. Trey Flowers, you know, with the most experience there for sure, but now you've got kind of a three-way race between Dunbar, should he get back, Flowers, and Reed maybe making a name for himself there too. We've got about a minute left here before we get to a special Wednesday edition of The Huddle. Dave Wyman joining us for that. And speaking of Trey Flowers, we'll have him joining us in the 1 p.m. hour, so you're not going to want to go anywhere. Our last question for you, I'm making it Thanksgiving, and I'm making it a fun one because I'm also seeing the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line get heated, saying y'all need to put some respect on green bean casserole. Jake and Curtis, you can chime in too. Tarek, if you want, it is Thanksgiving.
I will not.
First of all, grateful for all the listeners. Secondly, what is without a doubt the most controversial Thanksgiving dish? I want to say green bean casserole because I hate it. I love stuffing, but I think stuffing is the most polarizing dish. You either love it or you hate it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm one of those people that hate it. I just can't get on board with stuffing. Can't get on board with green bean casserole. But there are so many other. I mean, yams are unbelievable. Rolls are unbelievable. Turkey and gravy. You get the right gravy, it brings everything together. And mashed potatoes. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. And I know I'm leaving out some hallmark, you know, signature pieces of a Thanksgiving dinner here. But that's what instantly comes to mind.
All right. We have a Wednesday edition of The Huddle with Dave Wyman. Trey Flowers will be joining us also. That's coming up next.